Hey guys, it's me, James. This week's edition of the Hotcast is going to be a bit different. We've got a special report actually from my co-host Danny Raza, who's hit up Howard Hodgson to speak about all things Aston Villa, mainly with a focus on stuff going on behind the scenes. Howard's wrote a number of reports in the past, and of course, he's big at the Aston Villa Supporters Trust. Howard's someone I know. He's a good person, and he's always up for debate on Twitter, so he's always a good person to speak to about all things Aston Villa, including finances, which is something we're going to discuss with him today. But without me waffling on any further, I'm going to give it over to Daniel, and the next hour or so will be him discussing Aston Villa with Howard Hodgson. So yeah, enjoy, and we'll catch you next week when we get back after the Blackburn result, hopefully a victory for Villa, and hopefully we can go on forwards with positivity. But yeah, for this week, it's Danny and Howard, so enjoy.
Joining me on the line right now as a very, very special interview guest for the Hulkcast today is Howard Hodgson. He has spent 40 years supporting the club. He's previously been a director of the Supporters Trust, and he is very well known as a successful businessman who has been close to various people within the club. You might remember him having written certain reports on the club a number of years ago, and all in all, with everything that has been surrounding the club, I feel like he would be a very, very interesting person to hear from. Howard, welcome to the Hulkcast today. How have you rated this season so far as a Villa fan, considering you've been watching us for so long?
Well, hi, Daniel. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Well, I would say it's very disappointing. I mean, yes, we started with a couple of wins. I didn't think we were convincing in either of those games. Hull and Wigan, I think they were. A very late goal to win against Wigan at Villa Park. We then played Yeovil in the cup and were very poor on the night. Should have lost. Somehow, a bit of Codger magic meant that we won. But we all know, we've watched the game long enough to know that if you constantly play badly, it will catch up with you, and that's what's happened. You know, we've now gone four games without a win. We've not played particularly hard teams. You know, we went to Ipswich, who are, I believe, in the bottom three or four of the division at the moment, and played and only got a 1-1 there, and you know, they were down to 10 men for a lot of that game, and then we played Reading at home, who are rock bottom of the division. And all right, we let in a goal very late. But you know, 1-1 at home to Reading again was a poor result, and really was brought on by ourselves being very negative towards the end of the game. I think we were left with no strikers on the pitch at all. We're playing a 5-5 formation. Ridiculous. Sorry, the one I've missed out in between was Brentford. Now, in fairness, against Brentford, we played very well for an hour. I mean, you know, we did the high press and played with fluidity and movement off the ball and everything you really don't associate with this Aston Villa team under Steve Bruce very often. But it was good. But because the defence is so, you know, weak at the moment, and he's playing players out of position, and we're short on centre backs, etc., we still found ourselves 2-1 down into injury time, and only a great Codger header managed to get 1 point. And then obviously, go on, Daniel. Yeah,
no, sorry, you carry on.
Well, I was just going to finish really with the quick review of the season so far in terms of, you know, and then the you know, it really, you know, it all went horribly wrong last week. But we had the debacle at Burton, which, you know, Bruce completely blamed the fact that he was using his his B team, if you like, his players on the fringes, and he was expecting them to you know, really want to bust a gut and play well and sort of wipe Burton away. Instead, you know, it was quite the opposite. We were absolutely lethargic and terrible on the night, and thoroughly deserved to lose. And don't forget, they're now not even a Championship side; they're a League One side, and I think 21st in League One. But Bruce then afterwards claimed that, you know, you would see a very different Aston Villa on the Saturday against Sheffield United, a totally different 11, which he was good to his word. It was very different. But I'm afraid the performance, if anything, was even worse. And we, 3-0 down at half time could have been even worse than that. Not much better in the second half. So a 4-1 trouncing leaves everybody very deflated and the manager definitely under pressure.
So Howard, I mean, you mentioned this sort of slow decline we've had since the start of the season. I mean, we talked, you know, years ago, back when I was doing community radio in Birmingham, back before I had a beard, you know, it was a very, very long time ago. And, you know, this was during the time when Lambert was in charge as a manager. Yeah. And it was, I was going to say Doug Ellis for a second, it was Randy Lerner, who was owner of the club. Yeah. I mean, when you look at Villa right now, all the components are there, right? We've got a very talented squad. We've got good owners now backing us. Are things really as bad as they were back then?
Well, I mean, on the face of it, they're worse, aren't they? Because, because at least then we had Premier League status. And we'd been an ever-present in the Premier League, so we'd never been relegated out of the Premier League in the Premier League era. We were hanging on, and we thought it was pretty atrocious back then. And it sort of, you know, made me write that report back in 2014, I think it was, about everything that was wrong with Aston Villa. And I do remember saying, if they don't wake up, then we will eventually get relegated. And of course, we did get relegated. Things have got progressively worse. And unfortunately, we had the takeover with Dr. Tony. And, you know, he came in with a lot of, bluster and all the big claims that, you know, we were going to be winning Champions Leagues in 5 years or whatever. And here we are, third season in the Championship, almost went bust. You know, how frightening is that? The club almost went bust.
Very close.
Yeah, and, you know, running, you know, wildly above our means, out of cash, borrowed all sorts of future income against, just to survive. And it was a horrible gamble that went horribly wrong, very reckless. And thankfully, these two guys, you know, came, were found in the nick of time. And so we still had a football club. So that, you know, we should be extremely grateful for that. As you've alluded to, Daniel, we have an excellent squad of players, as we did last season for this division. An embarrassment of riches, really, with the exception of defence. He has somehow allowed himself to, and this is Bruce I'm talking about. Put a great squad together in terms of attacking options. You know, I mean, the likes of Bolasie and Abraham and Kodja and Grealish and Elghazi. I mean, these are top players. You know, I mean, they wouldn't look out of place in a Premier League side, let alone a Championship side. So terrific options. And John McGinn as well, who's, you know, done well. So going forward, you'd think we'd be fantastic now. But we're not particularly, because Bruce tends to play us in zones. He doesn't allow the players to really express themselves when we're in possession. So, you know, the movement off the ball is very limited, and they don't seem to be able to create the actual chances. We might have lots of possession, but because we're so sort of cautious in our movement off the ball, we don't seem to, you know, cut open teams up because, we're static and it's quite easy to defend against. So that's problem one. We've got great personnel, but the tactics for me are far too cautious. And then problem two is he's picking a team at the back, which is, you know, it's square pegs and round holes scenario. You've got Alan Hutton at left back when he should be at right back. You've got Axel at right back when he should be centre back. You've got Jedinak at centre back when he should be in midfield. I mean, it's just all over the place, you know. And you know, then you've got the added thing of Tommy Elphick, you know, where we're short on centre-backs and he allows Tommy Elphick to go out on loan, which, you know, is really bizarre behaviour from the manager, I have to say.
So, I mean, you know, comparing what happened back then when you released the report and whatnot, you know, a lot of the things that we talked about that were very much sort of higher up than the manager, those kinds of issues. They were very much sort of business issues. A lot of those things were. Are you telling me now that what we've got right now is purely an issue of management?
I think so. For this division, look, the club's got a long way back now. I mean, you know, when you're into your third year in the Championship, you're starting to become a Championship club. You know, the days of, oh, this is just a temporary blip, are getting close to being, oh, if we're not careful here, we're going to turn into Forest and Leeds. You know, we're going to be down here a long time. But, you know, they've put together another great squad potentially to dominate the division, certainly be in the top six and, you know, you would hope, really pushing top two. But, you know, for me, I look at team sheets every week when we play a team, say Ipswich, and you read down our 11 and, you know, these are big names, you know, you list them off. They're big names, well-known players. You go through the Ipswich team sheet and you think, well, I don't know any of these guys. You know, they're all fairly unknown players. You get the odd journeyman that used to be good, you know, that sort of thing. And it's our lack of tactics and our lack of coaching that's bringing the opponent back to us and making it a more level playing field, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think coaching is sadly lacking. And I think Steve Bruce, although he's had a great career in getting teams promoted in the past, you know, he's based it purely usually on having better players than the opposition, and clearly he has that here. But I think the standard of football and the standard of coaching in the Championship has gone up, you know, I really do. And if you analyze who's gone up since we've been in the Championship, you know, it's nearly all good footballing sides. You know, you've got Brighton, you've got Huddersfield, you've got Fulham, you've got Wolves. Probably only Cardiff was the only anomaly to that with Warnock. But even they played with a very much an authority and a directness and with a lot of pace. That, you sure. know, at least they had an identity. Villa's football is nondescript. There's no real style. You can't really put your finger on how we play. You know, it's not even a Pulis type, really well-organized, well-drilled side. It's, you know, it's conceding goals and it's all over the place and really only relies on individual magic to score goals. So, yeah, I think Bruce is a hindrance. I really do.
You talk about Steve Bruce and you talk about, you know, the fact that Villa have, you know, for the last couple of years under him, not made, you know, any real progress. I mean, obviously we finished third last year, but it would seem, you know, it would seem that, you know, now the way that we are playing this season, we're going backwards. You've been, you know, obviously close to various people who have been involved quite high up in the Aston Villa setup for a few years. Do you think in the minds of these owners, there's going to be a part of them thinking, look, we need to make a very drastic change? Or do you think that, you know, as many Villa fans believe, they'd rather sit there and wait to, you know, before making that kind of a massive decision, you know, giving Steve Bruce a chance?
Yeah. Well, see, Daniel, when they got the club, so I think it was July the 20th when they did the deal with Tony. For me, and you remember there was all that talk of Henry, etc. Now, look, I'm not saying they should have appointed Thierry Henry particularly, although, you know, it'd have been a really interesting experiment. I'd have been quite excited by it, but I have no idea if it would have worked or not because he has no track record. No. But I would have replaced Steve Bruce there and then. I just think, you know, it was time. He'd had his, you know, after May the 26th, when we cocked up that playoff final so badly, especially in the first half. I mean, you know, he's had his time. Clearly the previous owner or the previous majority shareholder couldn't afford to pay him off. So he survived. But the minute these guys came in, I would have said, you know, thanks, Steve. You know, thanks for steadying the ship. You had a good crack at it, but you didn't make it. Goodbye. Because there's good managers available. You know, whether you could have got somebody out of another club with the profile of these guys, maybe you could. But if you couldn't, there are good managers available in the open market. I'm talking Kiki Sanchez Flores. I'm mm-hmm. talking Oscar Garcia. I'm talking Ronald de Boer, Frank de Boer. You know, is it Ronald or Frank? I can never remember which one of the de Boer brothers is the manager. One of them, anyway.
I think it's Frank.
It's Frank, is it? I mean, he clearly didn't have a great time at Palace, but he only got about four games. He did great at Ajax. So, you know, he's a good coach. Ideally, I want somebody to come into Aston Villa and just grab it and, like, put down some proper coaching philosophies down there and start trying to do what Wolves have done, what with Santos, what Fulham did with Ivkanovic, you know, and, you know, play the fast tempo, good football that Aston Villa should be playing. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, that sounds a bit snobby. You know, you want, no, because, you know, I believe that good football goes hand in hand with good results, you know, and these guys have proved it. And it is the best way to get out of this division these days. And we have the quality of player to do it. That's the really frustrating thing. So in terms of answering your question, where we're at now with him, they're a bit stuck because they decided, you know, there was clearly something in the Henry thing. And for whatever reason, they decided quite late on to abandon that idea. And I think that was largely down to a lot of fans were pretty against it. So that probably spooked them a bit. And also the media, you know, really went on the violent defence of Steve Bruce.
That's worrying, though, isn't it? That it's come in. It's that the, you know, put their eyes on one man, though.
I agree that it's, you know, you know we're only speculating. It might not be, but I think that's the most obvious what happened, and that, you know, I would have hoped that they could have just stuck to having a vision and a philosophy and just stuck with what they wanted to do. But for whatever reason, maybe they spoke to Bruce and he, you know, he can be quite convincing in person, you know, in terms, you know, he seems to fool a lot of people.
Look at his signings.
So, well, yeah, exactly. People, you know, they signed for him. Yeah. I mean, I was listening to Tammy Abraham saying, oh, I can't wait to play dominating football. And I was thinking, mate, have you watched us under Steve Bruce? We didn't dominate games. Anyway, you know, he does manage to convince. So he's quite convinced. So maybe they met with him and they thought, right, yeah, that, you know, this guy, after all, this guy has done. I bet he gave him the big four promotion speech, you know, and he was one goal away from doing it last year. So they probably thought, well, actually, you know, Henry is like big name, but we really have no idea, you know, like Frank Lampard at Derby, we have no idea how it's going to go. Or, you know, this guy who did get very close last year, you know, and is the current manager. So the squad seemed to quite like him. So let's stick with him. So if you think of it from now, he's only been there six games with them. He's only lost one game, even though, you know, we haven't won in four. You can look at that two ways. And two of his big signings haven't even played for him yet in terms of Abraham and Bolasie. So he was never going to get sacked in this window, in this international break. That just wasn't going to happen. No matter how bad we were at Sheffield United and no matter really how right that decision would probably be, in my opinion. But you know, if he now goes to the next break and results haven't picked up, and again, we've got not very difficult run of games. I mean, I think we've got the likes of Blackburn, Rotherham. You know, there's plenty of winnable games coming up still. then if he doesn't get close to maximum points and keeps us very much in touch with the top two between now and the next break, then I think he's in trouble.
Yeah, I'd go as far as saying if he doesn't manage to pick up, you know, at least 4 points against Blackburn and Rotherham, yeah, I think the club will have to be considering his position. But I think rightly so, Villa fans are slightly speculative as to whether or not, you know, that the board are considering doing anything with him at the moment. Because as you say, if there was a point for Villa to have changed manager, to move to another direction, I wouldn't have said sack, then it would have been when they did come in. Wes Edens obviously has run a successful franchise in the NBA. Do you trust him to, or I mean, Nassif obviously is the leading owner at the moment, obviously. But do you trust him to make that decision when it is right, or do you feel a little bit more pessimistic about the club than he did at the start of the season?
It's really hard to answer that at the moment, Daniel, because it's such early days. You know, it's like, yeah, it's really early to be judging these guys on their capability of doing a sound job in running Aston Villa, you know, because it's such early days. You know, the big pluses in terms of, you know, the fact that they kept Grealish and Chester and, you know, and added all these quality players.
I mean, that's tremendous. Those are tremendous achievements already.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and you know, that so that was all terrific, you know, and you know, because they could have easily cashed in Jack Grealish to Tottenham, you know, because you know, the money came right up towards the end of the window. You know, I bet Daniel Levy's still kicking himself now, you know, the fact that he could have had Jack for 15 million if he'd done it earlier in the window off Tony, because Tony was so desperate for cash at that point. But of course, Daniel, being Daniel, thought we wouldn't get these two guys in, and probably thought he could get him for even less. So that backfired on Levy, and you know, oh dear, what a shame. But so it's absolutely great for us, and you know, and it's great that Jack's still there. I must admit, I think he's looked a bit frustrated in the last couple of games, Jack.
I think a lot of people are kind of looking at a lot of the performances of players on the pitch and wondering whether they're still, you know, putting 100% effort in there at the moment. You know, some fans suggesting that Steve Bruce has lost the dressing room. But, you know, to have kept a guy like Jack Grealish, you know, it was something that I was talking about in the summer window. I mean, you know, we talk about Aston Villa and we talk about the worth and, you know, there's all these issues with money going on. Jack Grealish is a huge asset. And, you know, he adds value to the club, doesn't he?
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, they've just picked up 55% of Aston Villa, 40 million quid. And Jack's value isn't that far off that, you know, maybe 25, 30. So, you know, if you look at it in those terms, yeah, he's hugely important. You know, and we, you know, he's our baby. We produced him. You know, he's a Villa boy through and through. He's big, big Villa family. You know, so it's, you know, he is the icon really now of the club. So yeah, it's fantastic that we held on to him for, you know, so many years. We've watched our best players get sold. It was that was great. So, you know, well done, Wes and Nassif on that front. Again, as I said, I think they made a mistake in sticking with Steve Bruce, and you know, at the moment that's looking valid theory. Look, Steve Bruce will win games. There's every chance that we will come back off this break and he'll go on one of his winning streaks. The problem is there'll always be a losing streak around the corner as well. And so how long do you continue on this cycle, you know, because with this squad, we will undoubtedly get fairly close again, whether he stays or whether he doesn't, that's for sure. But if you want to build something properly and do something, you know, long term and have, you know, go up promoted with a style ready to be able to play, you know, at the next level, then he's not your man.
And look, you're a businessman.
right? You're a businessman. People talk about stability at the club, and you know, you hear people asking the question, well, how many times can you sack managers over and over and over? Steve Bruce has been in the position for quite a while now. You know, it's time for him now. If he wants to perform, if he wants to take the club forward, he needs to do it now. It is absolutely crunch time. You know, this isn't a case of sacking managers willy-nilly now, is it?
No, I mean, he's been here nearly 2 years, which, okay, isn't a huge length of time, but it's long enough to know the way it's going to go. You know, he's had a few windows. You know, he's had nearly 100 games. You know, after that length of time, you know, how this is going to go. And, of course, he's been around the block a long time, and you only have to look at previous stints at other clubs to know how he manages. This is never going to change with this guy. I mean, you know, as I said, he's primarily brought in to do a job, which was to get promoted and to get promoted quickly as a specialist. And you know, he made noises, Daniel, that he would get us into the playoffs in the first season, you know, when he joined after 11 games after Di Matteo. Yeah. I've got the transcripts from his interviews and Wyness. They both said, you know, we can easily get into the playoffs this season. Well, we finished 13th. And the second season, you know, it was categoric. Bruce, on more than one occasion, said, well, look, I know that I won't be here next season if we don't go up. And, you know, that all seemed to change again. And the goalposts just seemed to always change. You know, things, you know, history seems to get rewritten all the time. And I just think that if you go with this guy, you need fairly instant results. And if he doesn't deliver it, it's very little point in holding on to him.
You mentioned Keith Wyness in your answer there. Now, obviously, at the end of last season, Keith Wyness was... Obviously, but you know, within the summer, we heard the news that he was no longer part of the club. But now there has been a new CEO appointed at Villa. What do you think is perhaps the thinking behind appointing somebody new, and what sort of role will they be playing in achieving the intended goals of the chairman?
So we're talking about Mr. Purslow now, are we, in terms of the new CEO?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, this is quite an unusual situation that's happened here in terms of Christian Purslow has actually taken equity in the club himself. We don't know the details of that. So whether he's actually bought shares off Nassif and Wes, or whether they've given him some equity. Well, you know, often you get with chief executives, you get offered what's called sweat equity, which is where you are basically, get offered some shares to basically incentivize yourself to, you know, incentivize the candidate to produce. You know, so if the company's doing well, he's doing well, etc. So whether he's been given equity on that basis, or whether he's actually invested his own money into the business, because by the way, he's very wealthy in his own right.
I still think so. You know, considering his previous posts.
Yeah, and he's been involved in private equity and all sorts of things. He's, you know, he's a very established businessman in his own right. So. So he's going to be, I think they've made it, but it's quite tricky because they've been very quiet, these guys, haven't they? Let's be honest. They did a very, very short initial interview when they bought the club. Mm-hmm. And we haven't heard from Purslow yet, have we? He hasn't done anything. So it's a little bit difficult to work out exactly, how integral his part's going to be, but I think he's going to be the main leader of the club. You know, I mean, I've known Nassif's executive chairman, but I think Purslow is going to be very hands-on chief executive from what I gather.
And, you know, obviously you mentioned them being so quiet. I mean, do you think it's some sort of a response to Tony Zea's style of management?
It's amazing, isn't it? Because we've gone Randy Lerner, who was, you know, complete recluse, and just made, you know, used to do these crazy statements every couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
Written statement. Yeah. the Shunammite and all that nonsense. Or then to Tony, who, you know, never really stopped talking, and certainly was extremely active on Twitter, let's say.
I liked it in some ways.
No, I mean, it was great, wasn't it? It was, you know, it was really, it was very unique. And, you know, a lot of people in the business world would frown upon it and say it's very unprofessional. And it's not what an owner of a club should be doing. But do you know what? It's a very unique style business football. And in many ways, it was refreshing. Obviously, he got caught out a few times, you know, with his bust ups with Holloway and other guys. And it was very entertaining. I think they probably looked at it and thought that was completely not the way to do it, and they probably have made a conscious effort to be the complete opposite.
Now, I know you've obviously previously been involved with the Aston Villa Supporters Trust. How important is it, you know, for these owners, do you think? I mean, obviously, because, you know, this is the Hulkcast, this is a fans podcast, of course. How important do you think it is that they do listen to the fans, and that the fans are involved some way in terms of helping them make decisions for the club?
I think good channeled fan involvement is essential. I mean, you know, it happens a lot in Germany. A lot of the German clubs, the fans actually own 51% of their clubs.
Yeah.
And it gives the clubs fantastic protection, because, you know, who loves the club more than the fans? Nobody. I mean, you know, we're the ultimate stakeholders. You know, we're the people that, you know, just, you know, we're the constant. We're the ones that are there through thick and thin. You know, and you know, one thing that annoys me is the fact that fan opinion often gets sort of undervalued. You know, businessmen think that, you know, we're too emotional, too passionate, etc. But actually, channeled right and coupled with, you know, good pragmatism, good business sense, and you can't beat it. I mean, because, you know, take for example myself, like I've 40 years of watching and studying this club. You know, my brain is full of Aston Villa.
Mm.
Now, with Purslow, every will in the world, he doesn't have that level of knowledge of the club. Now, he's obviously far more experienced at being chief executive of a football club. And I'm not for 1 minute saying I should be chief executive, he shouldn't. But you could easily, there is room for somebody, be it myself or somebody else with my, you know, my sort of background, that's, you know, had experience of being in boardrooms and making big business decisions, but also has that Aston Villa DNA and Aston Villa knowledge to represent supporters and give, you know, good informed advice on things, you know, whether they want to listen or not, that's up to them, because they ultimately own the club. But I think it would be terrific and very helpful to them to have that sort of knowledge on board. They shouldn't frown at it. They should welcome it.
You know, if you look at clubs like Lyon in the past, you know, this isn't necessarily involving fans or anything, but one of the reasons why they became so strong, you know, in the early 2000s and the late 90s was because they had, you know, they had more than one person making the decisions for the club. And, you know, that has been replicated more than a few times. It's pure business sense. I mean, I think it's almost 101 when it comes to decision making, that more than one brain, 10 brains, for example, you know, multiply that however many times as you want, are better than one. And I think, you know, that's something that you know, a lot of chairmen need to take into account, I think, certainly in my opinion. Because, as you say, why would you reject that kind of advice? Why would you reject that sort of knowledge that I'm sure is involved in the brains of so many Villa fans?
I agree. I think you know, that's it. You know, the fans, you know, a guy tonight on Twitter posted a picture of the. Do you remember that old green away kit in the 90s when Ron Atkinson was manager? Were you too young for that?
I was too young for it, but I've seen it and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And put the picture up, and he immediately said, what, it's just the shirt. And he immediately said, who does that make you think of? And straight away, you know, three games came into my head straight away. And the main player was Dalian Atkinson, because he scored away, you know, at Arsenal in that shirt and on our way to winning the League Cup in 1994. You know, and those sort of things. Now, I know that, you know, they may seem trivial to the running of a football club, but all that, you know, all that information. And, and when you live through the good times and the bad times, you know, you sort of remember how you got to the good times, and you remember how the bad times happened. And it's just all really useful stuff. And, you know, as I say, it should be embraced. And if they don't, then they're missing a trick. And I'm afraid, you know, Randy Lerner did, and to his huge cost. Mm. And, you know, Tony, well, he wasn't really there long enough to develop anything, because it was only two seasons. But anyway, let's hope that they do have a good relationship with the fans, and that they're and that we, you know, we can, you know, have a good rapport with our owners, because it's vital that owners and supporters get on, you know, they're not going to always make decisions that we're going to like, but providing that we can see that they're good, honest people, and they're running the business sensibly, and, you know, and they want the best for us, then that's all you can ask for, really.
Absolutely. And I suppose final thing on this point, you put out a hypothetical earlier on Twitter about the idea that, or the possibility, you know, what if NWSE, as you say, the holdings company that Wes Edens and Nassif Sefiris are, as correct me if I'm wrong here, have put together, what if they were to sell shares of the club to fans? Tell us what that would mean if that was to happen, and tell me what you think the likelihood of that happening is.
So if we look at Aston Villa's ownership as it stands, we have three major shareholders, if you like. You have Tony Shear, the former 100% owner, who now owns 45%, and you have Christian Purslow, who we don't know how much he owns, but I'm sure it's not very much, probably single figures, between 3-5%,
sure,
maximum. And then we have the two new guys, Nassif and Wes, NWSE, they call themselves, and they have 27.5% each. So that makes it your 100%. They'll have a little bit less, because I'm assuming that the shares that they've given to Christian Purslow will have come from their shareholding.
So right.
They'll be a little bit a bit diluted after that. So then if, I think what triggered the idea and why I put it out there today was, I said, well, they've been willing to give the CEO some shares, or they've even been willing to sell him some, or they've been willing to give him some. So if they're willing to do that with him, and we've not had an owner do that with any other CEO, then maybe they'd be willing to do that with the supporters. Now, it might be 5%, it might be 10%. I mean, it would have to be, I'm guessing, we would have to probably take it from Dr. Tony's shares, or depending on whether, as and when they're going to take over his shares, because they're going to want to retain majority at all points. So they'll always want to be over 50, I would have thought. I just wanted to explore the opportunities of either buying off Tony, you know, somebody that looks like he's on the way out of Aston Villa, on a sort of, you know, on a staggered basis, whether we could buy some shares off him, or whether NWSE, once they get his shares, and there may be a natural course of events where they take his shares, we could then take some shares back off them. And if we did, I've had some very good responses, some very positive, a lot of fans would be very interested to buy shares. But what we have to make sure is that we have a very good shareholders agreement, insofar as that we would get a seat on the board, and we would elect somebody to do that. And once that person was in place, he had a proper voice, representing the supporters and their shareholding. on how to run the football club, and to try and make sure that we have a slightly more happy decade than the one we've just been through. Because let's face it, since Doug Ellis sold Aston Villa, we've had loads and loads of rich owners, and it's been a disaster. And that just shows you that money alone just does not work. You have to have, you know, strategy and good decision makers. And they've been sorely missing. And I do think that there is room in that boardroom for somebody with Aston Villa DNA. And if it's, if the only way to get that person in there is to for the fans to buy shares, then why not?
Is Aston Villa DNA what's missing from the club? Is it that little piece of the jigsaw, I wonder? Howard, it's a very good theory to put out there, actually. I mean, I just wonder what would be a good amount, or what would be a decent amount for the club to put out for, you know, fans to have a say. But if it's
in terms of a stake.
Yeah, would it be 1-5%?
I think you'd want between 5-10% as a minimum,
right?
As much of as you could get. I mean, if you could get, you know, the more the better, because it just means that going forward, then if these guys suddenly have enough, let's forward wind in a negative frame of mind, and say we don't get promoted again this season, then we've suddenly got a business that is, you know, practically insolvent without these guys constantly putting money into
it. True.
And they might get fed up with these cash calls, constant cash calls. You know, these guys haven't made lots and lots of money to just throw it away all on Aston Villa. So I think they've seen Aston Villa as a massive opportunity. It was undervalued. They picked it up for a reasonable price. And if they get it promoted, that's going to multiply, you know, overnight significantly. Of course, you know, that was the scenario Tony Shear was banking on as well, and it didn't happen. And if it doesn't happen, there'll be no parachute money at all, and our turnover will be very, very small, and we've still got a very high wage bill. So we will be, you know, in trouble. And they, you know, they won't go on indefinitely. So if we've secured a good shareholding, at least at that point, then at least then we can at least, you know, be instrumental in who then buys the club going forward. True. Again, you know, as I say, this is a negative scenario. I'm hoping, you know, that, you know, we do get promoted this year or whenever it happens, and these guys are here a long time, and, you know, because they have the wealth and the ability to, once we get into the Premier League, to really keep us there, and then really, you know, get back to competing with the Spurses and the Liverpools and the Evertons of this world. But if they don't, at least if we've secured a good shareholding in the business, we've got, you know, we can try and protect it from future vultures.
Well, look, Howard, we've talked business, you know, for so long now, and I think both of us are raring to go to talk, you know, about some of the matters on the pitch. We've been talking about Steve Bruce. You obviously don't believe that he's the right man for the job at the moment. But let's pose a question. Aston Villa, obviously, we want to be getting promoted at the end of the season. That should be the target. There's no doubt in my mind with the squad that we have that we should be getting promoted. Let's pose a hypothetical that you have been brought in as a personal advisor to Steve Bruce to save his job. What is the first thing that you say to him? What is the first thing that you tell Steve Bruce that he is doing wrong, that he needs to do to fix AVFC's troubles so far?
Right. Well, I mean, it's a real hypothetical, because there's no way he'd ever listen to me. He's very okay.
But, okay. You know, first thing, maybe don't be so stubborn.
No, absolutely. I think that's a huge issue with him. And you know, I think he's been around now long enough to know he'll never change. But okay, let's look at it from that perspective. Well, for a start, you've got to pick players that in their positions, the positions that they know how to play. So, you know, Jedinak is not a centre back. So the first thing you do is take him out of the central defence. You know, he has to come out, you know. And depending on who we're playing, if we're playing big physical team, you can slot him straight back into his normal position. If we're playing a fast sort of mobile side, I wouldn't be picking him anymore, to be honest. Mm. He would probably be on the bench or not in the match day squad. But certainly when we're playing a Middlesbrough or somebody like that, you'd have him playing just in front of the back four. The strong rumours that John Terry's coming back. Obviously, if he's coming back, he'll slot straight into the central defence with Chester. And they, you know, for most of the last season, they were pretty solid. If he doesn't come back, then you've got to be looking at playing Axel in the centre back area, which is where he played for Man United in pre-season. Or there is the option of playing James Bree there. Apparently, he's looked pretty good. You know, pretty unproven and untried. Mm. But this is the scenario Bruce has left us with. You know, in terms of options at centre back, they're so limited. And then obviously left back. You know, he signed Neil Taylor. Now I know Neil Taylor's performances have really dipped in the last sort of few months, and I don't think he's really ever recovered from that injury he sustained in that Welsh game. Not really been the same player since, but I would give him a chance at left back because he is a left back. And then at right back, where you've got multiple options at right back, we've got about half a dozen right backs. You know, you could play Hutton there, you could play you could play Bree there if Axel's playing at centre back. You could play Delap there. You could play Elmo there. I mean, we've got so many right backs. It's ridiculous. The goalkeeper, early days. I mean, he's been very up and down. He made terrific saves against Reading. Double save was out of this world. And he made some very important saves against Brentford when it was 2-1, and they could have easily made it 3-1. And in the end, we got it back to 2-2, thanks to some great saves. Equally, he's made some quite bad errors, and certainly on Saturday, he looked at fault for a couple of goals. So I think it's early days in Ireland, and you probably persevere with him for now. But if the errors continue, you'd have to give the other goalie a chance. So you've got to get your defence sorted out because the defence has leaked, Daniel. 11 goals in 6 games.
It's awful, isn't it?
You know, it's virtually 2 goals a game. You've got to score 3 goals every week to win a match. It's not going to happen, is it?
And do you know what?
Not with Bruce managing.
Yeah, and I mean, the centre-back situation is something that I think everybody is really scratching their head around. I mean, you mentioned James Bree. It's a possibility over there, but you know he's a young right back. I mean, I think I had a massive complaint to make last week. You know, about the fact that we signed such a young and promising right back, and then we're almost ruining him by playing him at centre back. But the reality is, right now, is you know we have Axel Tanzibi, who Bruce seems to be deploying at right back. But other than him, we've got one recognised centre back in James Chester. Now there has been some funny stuff flying around Twitter. Really, really funny stuff. Some people alluding to the idea of a conspiracy theory that Steve Bruce purposefully got rid of Elphick and didn't sign a centre back so that you know the owners would be forced to sign John Terry. Firstly, could we dismiss any ideas of a conspiracy? And secondly, do we think the club could really afford him?
Listen, if that was the case, and you know you mentioned earlier, well, that's a bit worrying if you know they backed out of sacking Bruce because they were worried about fans and media reaction. Well, if then he's managed to pull off this sort of situation, you know, again, and really, you know, I don't care how wealthy they are, you'd be very worried that they really don't know what they're doing, you know, allowing a manager to manipulate a situation like that. I don't think that could possibly have been the case. I mean, at the end of the day, they very nearly signed the French guy, Harold somebody, do you remember?
I think his name was.
He came over. It began with M, didn't it? Anyway, he came over and, you know, and he was all set to sign and then he had a change of heart. So for once, Bruce didn't work his magic on there. And then And then, you know, they tried to sign the Scottish guy as well, very late in the day on the Friday. And they would have got him, but they were insisting that they paid that we paid 10 million in January to make the deal permanent. So I don't think this Terry is a conspiracy. It does beg the question why he's, you know, allowed this situation to arise. And if, you know, if John Terry was his preferred option, then, you know, why they just didn't bring him back earlier. But anyway, he's, you know, if he does come back, I'm not sure how. He's going to be 38 in December. Now, I know he's an exceptionally fit man, but he, you know, he was caught out on occasion last year. So he won't resolve all our issues. But his presence, I would say, his presence and his effect on others certainly will help Steve Bruce a great deal. He's clearly a very key person in the dressing room, and they clearly missed his leadership big time.
As far as the midfield and the attack goes, you know, I think I've made no secret in believing that there is a very healthy squad available to us. I mean, if we ignore the defence, which is absolutely crooked at the moment. We've got Jack Grealish. Obviously, we've still got a hold of him. We've got the likes of Conor Hourihan, John McGinn, if we're talking about the midfield. And then we look at some of the signings that have been made. El Ghazi, who's a terrific signing. I don't think many people really understood when we signed him how terrific a signing he is. And then you've also got what's his name? Sorry, Yannick Bolasie as well, who he signed. And, you know, Tammy Abraham's just been signed. We've got Jonathan Codger. I mean, that attack force is ridiculously good.
It is.
Do you think that they're going to be able to overcome this? What's the word? This negative identity that Villa have gotten now, that we're negative and unable to score goals.
It'd be absolutely crazy, wouldn't it, to have all those attacking options and those flair players that you've just listed and not play with attacking intent. I mean, it would just be ludicrous waste of resource. But, you know, first of all, you have to get a balance. You can't play them all. You've got to have a balanced team. So we probably need to try and work out what our best team is. And second of all, they need to be allowed to play with freedom. You know, they can't play in these zones that Bruce does. I've watched players, they're frightened to make runs off the cuff, off the ball, because they're so drilled into their defensive duties that they're worried about them being caught on counterattacks, etc. But, you know, you've got to let them, you know, let the horses run, you know, let them go for it. Yeah, I mean, you know, you just listed a fantastic set of players there, and should be goals, goals, goals in there.
No, should be.
Absolutely. So, I mean, who would you, Daniel? What would be your team? Going forward,
my team. I mean, I think personally, you know, the first thing really that we need to do to actually win some game. I mean, I'm perplexed by this because of the fact that we've been, you know, giving away so many goals and the fact that, you know, we've lost so many points, is that at some point, you know, if your experiment isn't working, and make no doubt about it, Tanzibi at right back and Jedinak at centre back is an experiment. And firstly, I want to say, you know, I admire Steve Bruce for trying that and trying something different to see if it works. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But when you see repeatedly that it doesn't work, achieve some balance first of all. So having said that, you know, whilst I liked Alan Hutton at left back last season, I think what you do is you play Hutton at right back or El Mohamedy. You play Tanzibi and Chester at centre back, and you play Neil Taylor at left back. Then, you know, in terms of the goalkeeper, I say you persist with Nyland, you know, despite how many mistakes he's been making. Part of that could be down to the defence. Then in terms of the midfield, I'd say you go with Bjarnason as the holding midfielder. I'd say you then go with McGinn and Grealish just in front of him. And then I'd say you go with Tammy Abraham up front. You go with Yannick Bolasie on the left-hand side and El Ghazi on the right-hand side. Or you switch those two around. I think, for me, that is the team that I'd start with.
and you can play around with Conor Hourihan.
And you got Kodjo on the bench, yeah.
Yeah, and Hourihan. You know, I think Hourihan has as much of a right to be starting as Grealish or McGinn.
Yeah, no, and it, again, you know, that just highlights, you know, the depth and the quality of the player, and you can, when you can afford to leave out Kodjo and Hourihan, and, you know, there are others. Hepburn Murphy, I'm sure, given a chance, will be a, you know, a good player, played in the right way. So there'll be loads of, you know, threat from the bench, which you obviously need.
I mean, would you do anything different?
So, yeah, I think that's a good team. No, it's a good team. Good team. Yeah, no, I like Kodjo as a player a lot. But you can. There's loads of room for rotation there, isn't there? So that, you can rotate depending on form and fitness.
Right.
So.
And you don't have to put out four or five injured players like you did last week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just annoying. Statements like that just annoy me. You know, but the squad's good enough to. You still, you know, you just mentioned Hourihan. He didn't start him, did he? He could have done. Balassi's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's had a lot of injury problems. And he's obviously arrived at Villa Park unfit. But he's getting there now on big money, big money.
Do you reckon?
So, well, I know he was on 80k a week at Everton. I don't know how much of that we're paying, but I would have fought for Everton to let him go. We will be paying a fair amount of it. He was a massive player at Palace. They sold him for 30 million quid. So he's extremely, extremely talented, but he has had severe injuries, and hasn't seemed to come back from that injury too well yet. Let's hope that's why Everton have let him go on loan. Let's hope that we're going to see the real Yannick Bolasie, because if we do, he'll rip the Championship apart.
Yeah, and don't forget that he was a £25 million player. You know, Everton signed him from Crystal Palace for £25 million 2 years ago. You know, he could be that key in the Championship. As I say, these players, they're just too good for us not to go up. And as worried as I was last season when obviously we didn't go up with the players that we had, I'd be even more worried by the end of the season if we don't go up with this squad. I think it will.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, business-wise.
We won't. Put it this way. Put it this way, yeah, Daniel. We won't see a squad next season with this level of quality. I promise you that. I mean, you know, these guys will rein it in a bit. Because they can't. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with FFP. We're clearly, massively in breach of it.
Yeah.
They're clearly not that worried about it. They probably just see it as a tax, a fine, or whatever. Looking at what's happened at QPR and Bournemouth and things, they think that they'll probably be able to get around it. If we don't go up this time, I think we will definitely see. Some severe cutbacks next season because they'll just have to, because the club just won't have anything like the income to support a wage bill that we're running to at the moment. And that's why a lot of these players have come in on loan. You know, it is, again, a one-year strategy, really, with the option, obviously, if we do get promoted, then you can keep a lot of them and turn the loans into full-time signings. But sure. and equally, if you don't, you can let them go.
Well, look, Howard, it's obviously a very, very delicate situation at the club, and it has been for a very long time. It almost seems like it has been for, a good decade or so now. But I am sure that you are a very busy man. So what I will do now is ask you for a couple of predictions. Now, two very different predictions here. I want to know what you think the score will be you don't even have to go exactly the score. I mean, tell me whether you think, Bruce is going to be making any changes for this game, and tell me how you expect the result to go, against Blackburn, which of course is our next game. And also, how long do you think it is before the chairman, Saweris, Edens, Zia, make a very drastic decision on the club?
In terms of the manager, I assume you mean, on that.
Yeah, that's what I'm alluding to.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's do Blackburn first. Blackburn, they made a good start. They're playing quite well under Mowbray. And it's away. It's going to be a hard game. We're not playing well at all away from home. I think it's a 1 point. I'd say a draw. In terms of then home to Rotherham, absolute must win. And I'd be amazed if we didn't win that one on the Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And then we finish off the little trio with Sheffield Wednesday at home the following Saturday. Yep. And then, you know, they're quite an unpredictable team with little Barry Bannum pulling the strings in midfield. So I could see us cocking that one up as well and getting 1 point again. So I'm afraid I'm only going to be able to see 5 points from those.
Is he going to make changes?
Which I think, you know, obviously, I mean, do you think we're going to, John Terry is going to come back?
Nah.
I think he probably. No, you don't.
Wait, hang on. Do you think he will?
I mean, it'll all be down to John, I think. I think if he wants it, then I'm pretty sure that, you know, Steve would like to have him back. So it'll be down to JT, won't it? And depends if he, you know, how it compares to probably a stack full of other opportunities that he's got on his desk. He's made these sort of cryptic clues on his Instagram that's sort of implying that he might be coming back. But who knows? We have to assume he's not there at the moment because he hasn't signed. So in terms of, let's assume he hasn't, if he surely will, he'll be bringing Tammy Abraham into the team for sure. Right. And if Yannick's ready, Yannick could be playing as well, I'd have thought. So those that you are going to see changes in the forward end of the pitch. The back end, I mean, if he persists with Yedinat, then, you know, more fool him, because, you know, I don't think Yedinat wants to play there. You know, that's the point. And you touched on earlier about potentially he's starting to lose the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I think the way he's treated people like Elphick and Adoma. And there's another player that we haven't even talked about.
Oh, gosh. No, we haven't spoken about that at all.
Yeah. So, you know, all those assists and goals last season. Adoma is a very popular person at Aston Villa. And even though Tommy didn't play much and has not had a good time at Villa, he's been popular as well. And I don't think people would have liked the way he's treated somebody. And so you're getting cliques, if nothing else. You've got, you know, his favourites that will probably still be loyal to him. But then there's plenty of people in that squad, you know, like your McCormacks and your Delats, etc., who will despise him. And, you know, that tends to spread, especially if results start going wrong. So, yeah, he's faced crisis before at Aston Villa. He's been very close to the sack before, and he always seems to come out of it. But as I said to you, the problem is here that he'll win a few games and then he'll lose a few games, and it's whether it's going to be enough come the end of the season. Yeah. Highly debatable.
Totally. So I guess it is really hard to make any sort of prediction on what the owners do. Me personally, I don't see them as being the types of owners who will make a decision on a vim. But I'm sure they'll see what's going on at the moment, and I guess it's something to revisit after these three games.
Yeah, Daniel, I think that they'll either look at it, they'll take the season into blocks. A lot of people do that. They'll say, oh, we need to be here at 10 games. We need to be here at 20 games, you know, points tallies. And if you're miles off that target, you know, most people have 2 points a game you need to average, try and average to get automatic promotion.
Yeah.
And if you're miles off that target, and at the moment he's not miles off. I mean, he's got 9 from 6. So although we've played very badly, and frankly, we're lucky to have 9 from 6. If he wins the next two, he'll be on 15 from 8. He'll be almost on target. So he isn't a million miles off at the moment. But if these games don't go well and we start to get adrift from the pack, then, you know, the pressure from the terraces will be intense, and I think they'll probably buckle and let them go. But if they do that, you can't do it too late, because if you do it too late, it can actually be counterproductive, because players get in such a set way of playing that mid-season changes can actually sometimes send a team spiralling the wrong way even further, as you saw at West Brom last year, you know, when Pulis was sacked and they tried to go with Pardew that is meant to play a more expansive style, and look at them, they couldn't buy a result. And then they sort of went back to a more pragmatic style with Darren Moore, and they nearly survived. But, you know, so, you know, you have to be very careful with this. And this is why I like, if you're going to change managers, I much prefer to do it in the close season. But equally, you know, the season is still in its infancy. There's still 40 games to go. And so there's loads and loads of time. But if he doesn't get some good results in the next, up to the next international break, I think they'll be under intense pressure from the fan base to make a change.
Certainly, Howard. Well, look, I mean, I've really enjoyed listening to you today. I've really enjoyed talking to you. You are, as I believe, and I'm sure as many other fans believe, you know, one of the greatest minds amongst the supporters. So, you know, thank you very much for spending your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Really good to talk to you, as always, my friend. We go back a long way, and no doubt we'll continue to have chats long into the future.
Absolutely, and hopefully we'll have a positive report coming out about the success of Aston Villa in a few years' time. Before you go, is there a way to keep up with your work and you know, some of your social media?
Yes, so basically Twitter. I've got my Twitter handle is at Hodgson Howard, and it's an open account. Anyone that wants to have a reasonable chat about Aston Villa, I'm absolutely all ears. And even if you love Steve Bruce, you hate Steve Bruce, either, as long as it's civil and as long as it's not abusive, then I'm all ears.